Okay, everybody, welcome back once again to Tech Gumbo. I'm Haggai Davis II, along with Haggai Davis III, and we'd like to welcome you to Tech Gumbo. Here on our show, we like to talk about the past, present, and future of all things technology in a topical, interesting, and digestible way. Without geek speak or a bunch of acronyms, we just want to talk about technology that's important to us and important to you.
We also want to thank Cardinal Capital. To business owners and CEOs, hopefully you have a good relationship with your lender. Even if you do, sometimes you face other challenges, such as a need to consolidate debt, a want to level out your cash flow, or a desire to buy new equipment because you're in growth mode. If this describes you, give Cardinal Capital a call, whatever your need or challenge. They have over 4,000 lenders where they source commercial capital for business clients. Chris, Gary, and Rob at Cardinal Capital have a passion for business, and they want you to succeed. When you meet with Cardinal Capital, they get to know you and your business, so they can present your needs to a lending institution that will best fit your unique situation. In short, they go after money for your business. They translate your business into what's important for lenders, and they are good at it. Depending upon what the deal is, no matter how complicated or straightforward, they will help maximize your profitability while setting your business up for success. They find the best solution for your situation, all while being fun and easy to deal with. For more detailed information, visit their website at cardinalcap.net. You can also call them 225-308-3700 or email them info@cardinalcap.net.
Okay, Mr. Davis, let's have ourselves a big old helping a Tech Gumbo today.
Sounds great.
Well, as we like to do, we'll kick off with the news and updates, and this is going to have a bit of a theme to it. You'll maybe see if you pick up on it. Space Force is going to be doing some military exercises out in space.
This is pretty cool. They are working to plan a on-orbit aggression response. So basically, that they want to have a plan in place for if someone attacks a satellite, what do you do?
Yes, the demonstration is basically preparing us for these combating situations. And how do you respond to an adversary who's going after your satellites? And how do you, or if you've got a rocket up there, or if it's the space station, this will be really cool to watch it play out if we really get to see any of it other than the headlines.
Oh, my guess is that if you're doing it in space, it's pretty visible. It's hard to hide something when it's up in the air like that. But yeah, this is the future of war. You have to think that as satellites become more and more valuable, as more countries develop the ability to get to space, that one day someone's going to do something we don't like, we're going to do something that someone else doesn't like, and it's coming. It hasn't happened yet and probably won't for a short term, but you put the plans in place. And also, maybe you do it visibly so that you deter anyone else. If we say, hey, look, China, if you get any sort of ideas, this is what we can do. We know that you can't match us yet. It's not worth you trying. That is the best form of defense, is if you could show outright, you would obviously win, and you never have to have the war in the first place.
Gee, sounds like the Star Wars defense from the 1980s. This also is going to be somewhere between $30 and $60 million for this test, so it's not like they're just doing it on a laptop and going to not have any real action going on. This is going to involve a lot of people, going to have a lot of things going on, and going to use a bunch of equipment, probably going to launch a rocket or two.
Yeah, launch them from all over the world. Some are going to launch from Cape Canaveral. Some will launch from New Zealand. You know, these are people who are really pointed everywhere.
It'll be interesting to see. It's supposed to happen sometime in the fall of 2025. The on-orbit aggression military exercise from the U.S. Space Force. Next story we wanted to get to, Starlink is going to start cracking down on people using their dishes where they're not supposed to.
So there is a growing market for Starlink in African countries, especially in Sudan, Zimbabwe, South Africa. Those are places that have poor infrastructure. And so if you can all of a sudden pull down some pretty solid internet off the Starlink system, that can be huge for you and your business.
So in addition to places like Russia and China, which do not like SpaceX for obvious reasons. These countries have much different reasons for why they don't want the SpaceX. They're number one, they're kind of concerned that they don't want too much information being released too rapidly. They want to these are governments that are wanting to control the flow of information to their citizens. And so all of a sudden you put in the internet and let people start seeing the realities of what's going on outside of some of these countries. This is going to be a problem for a few of these governments.
So as you mentioned, that these are all authoritarian countries, Sudan, Zimbabwe, the Democratic Republic of Congo. These are places that are explicitly trying to control the flow of information, and that they are concerned about the fact that if their citizens can start seeing images of what life is like in other countries, or can start seeing what life is actually like in their country when it's not filtered or altered, that maybe they start getting some ideas. And that's the whole goal of this, is that if you can provide this free flow of information, that is the true ideal of the internet, is that you're able to connect people in a way they had never been before. And SpaceX is trying to make sure they just don't make anybody too angry as they do this.
So what a lot of these people are doing is, obviously you can't buy a Starlink kit and have it shipped to you in these different countries. So they're going to other countries, they're buying their Starlink dishes, or they're using middlemen companies that are willing to repackage and ship these dishes to you. And then these people are signing up for roaming plans, because you can't sign up for a local internet access in Sudan or in South Africa or Zimbabwe, one of these countries. But if you're on a roaming plan, well, okay, you're not really based there. So it kind of is working right now. But Starlink, they know exactly where everybody is who is pulling down their signal. So they're starting to send emails out to these people saying, look, we see you're using Starlink in countries where it's not supposed to. You're going to have to stop.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, some of the other customers have been schools. That, you know, you have, again, rural schools. And if you can show the internet to kids and say, hey, look, you know, you've only ever seen old books that are tattered and worn. Here's the internet, where everything is new and all this information, all these new incredible things out there. And then those kids are like, wow, that could be my future if I sit down and learn. And then you turn that switch off. Do they say, oh, well, yeah, now I have to go back to the old rags? That's not really as motivating anymore. And so what was going to happen to those children who we're right there on the bubble, but just don't quite have access to these resources anymore?
And there's a lot of aid groups who are going into these countries, bringing help, bringing assistance, bringing food and those kinds of things. And they're bringing their Starlink dishes with them too, so they can communicate back with the home country, with the international organizations that are supporting them. And they're being told, oh, we're going to have to turn off your internet as well. That's making it very, very uncomfortable for some of these countries who are trying to provide aid. They're not about to cut off their staff who are on the ground in these countries.
That's wherever you can really see why this technology is so incredibly valuable. The ability to communicate, the ability to bring information, the ability to really unlock some of these areas that have been isolated. But you know, you have this political fight of, is it allowed? Is it authorized? And it gets messy. And that's why Starlink is an international corporation. They have to make sure they're not angering too many people here.
Moving along, NASA has said that they are trying to get some of these rocks back from Mars, some of these core samples. And they had some plans all along on how to do it. You know, these rovers have been going and collecting samples and dropping the little canisters along the way behind them. But they're looking at their plans to get those back here, and they're like, hey, you know what? Let's see if there's anybody who's got a better idea.
Because the plan would cost somewhere in the order of $11 billion. And so that is pretty high. Now, the question is, if you could cut it from $11 billion down to $4 billion. Once you're in the billions of dollars like that, yeah, you know, it's those numbers kind of sound the same to me.
Even if you cut it from $11 billion just to $8 billion. Okay, well, what are you cutting out? What safety features, what redundant systems are you getting rid of to strip down this thing so it looks like the rocket from the Martian to get back to the mothership? If these samples are that valuable, do we really want to really strip this thing down that much?
Well, especially because there have been lots of studies on NASA, and their return on investment for every dollar spent on NASA is, pardon the pun, astronomical. It is some crazy factor that whenever the U.S. government spends $1 on NASA, that generates so many other dollars in our economy because of the contractors that get paid, because of the development and technology that happens, because of the science that we unlock. If anything, we should be trying to spend more money on NASA because they are a force multiplier. And so, while yes, you do still want them to have to think of what they're doing and really justify their actions, that they're not just doing everything and anything because they can, but this is an economic powerhouse, and one of America's truly great things that we do, we should be amplifying it instead of saying, well, we're going to have to cut your budget because budgets should be cut.
If you're a space contractor out there and you have some better ideas of how to possibly get some of these Martian samples back here to Earth, give NASA a call. They're looking to save a few bucks. NASA has also received a letter from the White House. The White House wants NASA to come up with a standard time zone for the moon.
Coordinated lunar time is what they're going to call it. And this makes a lot of sense from an operational standpoint. You want to be able to say what time it is on the moon. The problem is this question of what time is it sounds very simple. But if you ask any software engineer, it gets very, very complicated very quickly. Because is it daylight savings time or not? Are you in a place that even recognizes daylight savings time or not? What time zone are you in? What if you travel a little bit? Going backwards, is it a leap second? How many leap seconds do you have to account for? Different countries have different policies. Portions of India only move 30 minutes backwards and don't move the full hour in their time zones. And so these are all just problems that you face on this one rock. What happens when you go to a different rock and you get a whole different set of problems?
The fact that the Earth and the Moon move at different rates, we get into Einstein's theory of relativity now. Time moves differently. Because Earth has more gravity, time travels slower than on the moon, which has much, much less gravity. The same thing with our satellites, though they're on a different time rate than what we are here on the surface of the Earth.
Which makes things very complicated because, you know, at least with the satellites orbiting the Earth, you can kind of say, you know, oh, well, they're above this time zone. But again, if you're on the moon, does the moon have one time zone for the entire planet or for the entire rock? Do you split it into half, thirds? Do you split it in 24 like Earth is? What's the relationship between each time zone to each time zone? And that's just for the moon. Our plan is to get to Mars one day. Are you going to have different time zones on Mars? And then how do you sync the time zones on Mars to the moon to the Earth? These are the types of things that this plan is attempting to address. And good luck to them, because this sounds like a dozen different headaches, a dozen different directions.
Well, we didn't even get into the fact that, okay, this is the US's plan for the time on the moon. When China puts their rockets and lands on the moon, or Russia, or India, or Japan, or the European Union, or whichever group else is up there, do they have to recognize the time zones or this time standard that the U.S. put up there? Or do they say, nope, you know what? We are going to do our own clock. You do your clock, we'll do our clock. And now you've got no unified clock on the moon.
This could be if done right, this would be very beneficial for future operations, for future business, for future science. If done wrong, this blows up and it just becomes a complete unmanageable mess. And I'm just glad that this is not what I am working on.
Moving along once again, getting into solar power and or just appliances and battery power. Apparently, there is a new push to make some of the larger appliances that are in our home outfit them with batteries that can hold charges instead of pulling power directly up the power grid all the time. Now, when we can get power to them less expensively overnight, say, that refrigerator may hold a little extra power and not need to be pulling from the grid all the time.
Yes, if you can think, you know, a little bit about Tesla's Powerwall. The idea of just very large quantities of battery that maybe are disguised as a wall in your house, that would be really beneficial because you could start to store charge there. And even then, the price of electricity varies over the course of the day. In South Louisiana, in the afternoon summers, whenever everyone has their AC on full blast, your price of electricity is going to be much more expensive than at 3 in the morning after it's cooled off a little bit, after everyone's asleep. If you could buy your electricity at its cheapest and just store it for that day, and then, you know, maybe you're running your AC unit off the grid, but as you said, you're powering your refrigerator, you're powering your washing machine, you're powering your dishwasher or your television or those other things that have those larger draws. If you could just push that down, demand down a little bit, that has really big savings for you as the end user. And it also makes the energy company's life a lot easier because you're not placing that demand on the grid.
You're not going to be putting these batteries, your blender's not, or your microwave is not going to be running on a battery. It's going to pull from the grid, if you will, the electric grid. But if you had a, like you said, a whole home battery that you could run everything in your house off of these whole home batteries that is supplemented by the electrical grid, sure, that would be fine. In the middle of winter when there's not a lot of sun, okay, great. We're going to need to pull in more power from the companies. It's an interesting concept, but in California, they're having just the opposite problem right now with too much solar power.
They're actually generating so much solar power in portions of California right now that the price of electricity is going negative, that the demand for electricity is so little because there's so much solar power being generated by the end users, by people who have solar panels on their roofs, that there's just not people buying that same amount of electricity. And so on one level, this is fantastic. Because again, if you're that consumer, then you are no longer having to buy energy from the grid. It's just falling on your house and you're getting it for free. And if you are the energy company, you own the infrastructure, one of our large concerns for America over the next 5 to 50 years is we're going to start consuming a lot more energy in general. And so we're worried about the demand on our grid. Do we have enough wires in place to move all of this energy? Are those wires reliable? How old are they? If we can reduce some of that load on those wires by having the energy just generated directly at the endpoint, that's fantastic. But the problem is that these energy companies are also businesses. They are a weird type of hybrid company that they're not truly profit driven in the same way. Their profits are capped, but they are guaranteed some return on their investment. And if all of a sudden they can't sell their main product or the price of their product goes down so much, that affects how much money they're allowed to make. And that gets into all these weird policy questions. And that's a lot of what makes this transition to electrical energy and battery power and renewables so difficult is we are going to have to make large changes throughout our system.
It really gets into the trying to maximize solar without putting the power companies out of business and trying to find a comfortable balance in Southern California and Arizona, Nevada, where you have bright sunshine 300 plus days a year. That works pretty well. And so maybe those power companies start trying to offload their electricity to other parts of the country. The long haul of your grid is going to be a little more difficult to get electricity to someplace like Colorado. You've got to go a long way and you're going to lose a lot of power going down that wire. So it's going to be an awkward situation for the power companies in Southern California, where they do get so much sun all the time compared to a state like the state of Washington, which is cloudy most of the time. They would not have the same situation that they do in Southern California.
We will have to find different solutions for a lot of different regions of the country, but this is something that should be viewed very positively because this is a step in the right direction, and these are good problems to have.
We want to thank General Informatics for sponsoring our show. General Informatics is an information technology firm with a mission to make our clients even more successful through the best use of technology. Based in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, General Informatics is a premier IT managed service provider delivering exceptional managed IT solutions to a diverse base of customers across the southeastern United States. From the beginning, we have maintained our commitment to meeting the growing needs of our clients through continuous innovation. With over 20 years of experience and a team of 180 plus employees, including technicians, engineers, program designers, GI has evolved to become the leading IT partner of business schools and government agencies. Our managed services teams can run your digital infrastructure or support your team on an on-demand basis, letting you focus on your business strengths. This has become a proven formula, so proven that 98% of our clients continue to do business with us year after year. Whether you need IT services, new technology, or have a question, visit us on the web at geninf.com.
Check out our podcast, available on almost every podcast platform, including iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, and more. When you're there, be sure to subscribe so you get notified every time we post a new episode. If you like our show or you have any suggestions, let us know on our website at www.techgumbo.net. Thank you for listening to Tech Gumbo.